Welcome to the Pain to Power podcast, where we have engaging, informed, and interesting conversations on topics including women's health, the menstrual cycle, chronic pain, trauma, the nervous system, relationships, and feminism. I'm Lisa Dion. I'm a women's health coach, facilitator, and educator, supporting you on your journey of healing, recovery, and moving into a place of personal power in your body and in your life. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 33 of the From Pain to Power podcast. And I am here with a special guest today. We're here with Liz Morton. So Liz is actually a follower of my work, and she is also a mindfulness meditation teacher, a yoga teacher, and she is a coach for executives in the workplace. And today we are going to have a chat all about menstrual cycle awareness and her own personal lived experience of integrating menstrual cycle awareness into her life and her journey with her own health and recovery. And that's what we're going to chat about, and how she brings it into her personal work and how it's benefited her. Yeah. So welcome, Liz. How are you doing?
Thank you, Lisa. Yeah, I'm great. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming on. Yeah, it's so great to have people on to share their stories. It's vulnerable, but I think it's kind of part of the journey, isn't it, as well, to start speaking and sharing and being able to share these very deeply personal stories.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the more we realize we're not alone in our suffering, you know, the less our suffering becomes. So sharing stories is always a good thing in my eyes.
Yeah, it's so true. And isn't, and it's so helpful and healing to hear other people's stories. Like, I love listening to other people's stories and reading other people's stories. And that's how I learned a lot as well, was through listening and reading and watching and just taking it all in. So yeah, it's such a part of the collective integration, especially with this kind of work, women's work and menstrual cycle awareness. We can't really do it alone, can we?
Absolutely. I think, like, you're spot on. When you feel alone, everything is much harder. And when you have, when you know you have the support and also lived experiences of others around you, you know, even in your darkest days, you can feel like you can put one foot in front of the other, for sure.
Yeah, it was the biggest difference for me in my own life was, you know, getting the supports and having them there in place. Mm-hmm. And because it's hard to reach out for support when you're in those dark days, isn't it? So to have them there in place and have them established is so helpful. So yeah, so we're going to talk about that, I'm sure, as we explore your journey. So we might start with how you discovered menstrual cycle awareness, or MCA for short.
Yeah.
So, and I do, just to share with people, like, menstrual cycle awareness, I do believe I have a few podcast episodes about this, but it's all about learning the different energies of the menstrual cycle and how that is kind of an embodied mindfulness practice, isn't it? And how every single day of the menstrual cycle is relevant from a hormonal and psychological perspective, and how we can start to learn to live more in sync with the menstrual cycle. And I know that you've trained with Red School. I've trained with Red School, and they were the organization, I suppose, that coined the term as well. So going to credit Alexandra and Shani there for the work. So yeah, I'd love to hear from you, Liz, about how you discovered it and the start of this path for you.
Yeah, sure. So I guess, like so many of us, I would have been on some form of contraception from the age of 18, probably, and never bled. I don't really remember too much about my cycle, too much about my period. And then tried kind of every contraception going, starting off with the pill. I know I had various issues with different forms along the way, but got to my early 30s and I had a coil, and I'd already started, something did not feel right within my body. I had loads of other symptoms. There was a lot of other stuff going on. So I had a really difficult relationship. I was struggling with depression, anxiety, and my mental health anyway. But with regards to the coil, physically, it was, had started to cause me quite a large amount of pain.
Was this soon after you'd had it inserted, or a
while after? No, I had had one, and I had just had it changed. I think that was what it was. Yeah, and it wasn't too long after it was changed. And I had to have it out anyway. Tissues had grown around it. It was very unpleasant. But that was the start of actually having a cycle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I hadn't, for maybe 20 years, I just hadn't had a cycle.
Wow.
Really. because I suffer from migraines as well, I know some people would have been put on the combi pill where you take a break and have a bleed, although it's a, as we know, it's not a proper period, but I never bled really. Mm-hmm. And it was great. I loved it, you know?
Yeah.
And I worked with teenage girls for a long time and, you know, still hear the same things now, you know, that it's such a relief when they don't bleed. And it just makes me so sad.
Yeah.
It's such an incredible tool to know where we're at and what our body's doing. But yes, that was the start of things, really. As I say, there was lots of other stuff going on physically, and I'd gone to many, many GPs, some women's health specialists with a list of symptoms, not really sure what was going on, but that had been around for quite a period of time. And never once was it suggested that I look at my cycle or my hormones, which is flabbergasting now to look back at. But that's where it all started.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very different, but it's similar in terms of the intensity to the journey I've had that I've talked about before. So I can really empathize with that, Liz. It's painful, isn't it? It's psychologically and emotionally, I know you're already in physical pain, but to have that, all those barriers in the medical system, and yeah, it's just so disappointing, isn't it? I think it is changing, but back then, I think you and I are of similar age. Like back then it was just like, there were no answers. And then the only solution was the pill or the coil. And obviously for some people that really does work, but a lot of people have really bad side effects from it. And then they get confused and don't know where to turn next.
Absolutely. I think from what I've experienced, like talking to the girls I was working with for a long time as well, is it hasn't changed enough.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable that as 14, 15, 16 year olds with menstrual pain or unhappy with their bleeding, that the first port of call is to put them on a pill that, you know, dysregulates their hormones going forward. So.
And I think, yeah, you really make a good point there, because something that I've been thinking recently that's made me kind of angry is, like, even though there's a lot of talk in the media about PMDD, well, maybe not so much PMDD, but definitely endometriosis is more being talked about more in the media. It was on a very popular TV show here in Ireland, I think, just the other day. And it's great and all, there's loads of awareness being raised, but the message that's constantly being driven home on those TV shows and in the papers is, make sure you go to the doctor, make sure you go to the doctor. But then the medical system is never actually being held account, because at the end, we've all been to the doctor. You've been to 10 doctors. I went to 10 doctors. Yeah. And no one in the medical system is holding up at their hand and saying, look, we don't have the adequate support and
training in the first place.
Training.
I mean, it enrages me hugely, because that's it, you just got the nail on the head. It again is put back to the fault of the individual, the fault of the woman, that, you know, if this isn't working for you, then it's obviously you, it's not our system. Do you know, it's just such horseshit, it's unbelievable. It really is. If it wasn't so devastating for so many of us, what can you do but laugh at it? It's just,
I know,
cracking.
It's really, it really annoys me. It really, really annoys me, because the message is constantly, go make sure you go to the doctor. I'm sorry, but have you not listened to women? You're actually not listening to us.
Women's health specialists as well, which is, you know, that was something else over the last few years, to be honest, Lisa, the last 4 or 5 years, and coming to the realization of, you know, a very long, long journey of severe depression and anxiety from a teenager, and actually coming to the realization that it was PMDD. Mm. And having seen women's health specialists, women's GPs, and not one of them ever, you know, ever saying anything to do with my hormones, or ever suggesting anything. And even when I presented and had done my own research and was like, I know that this is what is happening, God, the barriers and the, you know, the questions and the, well, you're not a doctor, you know.
Sorry, I actually am. Now I am, because I know more than you.
I am an expert of my own body, and you certainly are not. So you will listen to me, God damn it.
It's true. The amount of times I've said to myself, I should deserve that degree sometimes. You know, that qualification.
You've had to do so much fucking research. I know, right?
Yeah.
I know.
Also, I need to be a psychologist. That's another degree I
should. I agree.
No, anyway, so it's so important that we talk about these things, because I think that what's not understood in the mainstream is the systemic piece and how, like, there is no, you know, I don't think in medical school they talk about unconscious bias and how that's perpetuated and all these things, you know. So it helps to understand these things and then to look for different ways to work with the menstrual cycle, because ultimately the medical system is positioned as, it's like a diagnostic biomedical model.
Yeah.
And so it is very much taking the approach of diagnosis and pathology and all that. So you then discovered menstrual cycle awareness. I'm assuming you discovered that through Red School and Google. Did you?
No. It wasn't through Red School, actually. Like, I came to Red School very quickly after working out that I had PMDD, but I just can't remember exactly. I started tracking my cycle. Mm-hmm. And I very quickly realized, once I had started to get a regular cycle, that my moods, if you like, or this depression that has followed me around for the majority of my life was cyclical.
Mm.
And it was like groundbreaking, because I, you know, I'd remembered as a teenager and in my 20s and stuff going to GPs and being like, or psychologists or whoever would listen, and being like, I'm bipolar. Yeah. And then just being like, no, it's too quick, you know, and not one, nobody would had ever mentioned what it might be, but it just made so much sense. It was like this massive aha moment, like both one of amazing, like something tangible that I can really like work with now, but also so much sorrow that I had like 20 years of incredible suffering.
Yeah.
When, if anybody had been able to intervene or suggest anything, you know, there was such a possibility of that suffering having been reduced, you know, and of so many poor decisions along the way, and, you know, and not standing up for myself. And yeah, just hard, both amazing, but also really hard.
Yeah, I can totally appreciate that, the both of those emotions and experiences being in conflict but coexisting, you know. Yeah. I felt similar way when I was diagnosed with endometriosis, just really, really glad I finally got a diagnosis, but also really sad because I knew it was like a, you know, there wasn't really going to be a long-term cure.
Yeah.
And then all the suffering, like you, years of it beforehand, and then the lack of support and answers. So how did you discover like the term PMDD?
I just researched sort of, like, I guess like my whole life has been spent sort of, so, you know, searching for answers of what's going on in my brain, you know, of being, you know, having been diagnosed very young as a teenager as severe depression, anxiety, and labeled with that, and, you know, stuck onto antidepressants and on and off antidepressants, and knowing that that wasn't right for me, you know, but not being really able to advocate for myself until much later on.
Mm.
Just like listening to my body and realizing like so many things happening through my cycle, I was like, what is this, you know, and searching and researching. And then I went on to, I mean, this is really recently, so like it's only 2 years ago that I sort of realized that this is what it was, at 36 or 35 kind of thing. And I had been sort of suggesting to doctors around that time and slightly beforehand that something wasn't right, that it was felt cyclical, but nobody said anything, you know. I then went onto some forums and found GP that had been, you know, her name had been mentioned. It was very difficult to get an appointment with anyone anyway. There's a specialist apparently in Dublin that charges €800 for the first session for an hour. Like, good on you. You're changing the world. Well done. I hope you're happy in your bloody mansion somewhere. Thanks for helping all the women who are struggling. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah. God, I'm coming across with some rage here, aren't I? But there you go.
That's very welcome. This is a podcast for rage.
So I found the GP, went to her, and I was like, look, I've tracked my cycle. This is exactly what's happening. You know, I wasn't I was very prepared, having had to fight for my well-being in the medical industry for so many years, for having to fight my way through appointments with GPs, having to have my voice heard, not being, what's the word? Oh, not just not being like cast aside, you know, here's another pill, or have antidepressants, and just being like, no, that is not the answer for me. I know this already. So just being, you know, really stepping into my own sort of knowledge of my body, and then backing it with research and not taking no for an answer, really.
Yeah.
So, yeah, then from that point, I had read about certain like treatments that had worked for people. So an estrogen patch between ovulation and bleed was apparently an option that had worked for quite a few people, because I needed antidepressants and the pill weren't, and I wasn't willing to compromise my cycle again. So that was what we started with. And the journey continued from there. I can talk more about it, but it's quite a long process.
Well, if you want to, if that feels relevant to you in this moment.
I mean, it's, I suppose, just like kind of, it's along the same vein with regards to, you know, the medical industry not particularly being great advocates for women's health, or maybe what's best. And like you say, it's very prescriptive. So yeah. From there, I guess I had quite a big burnout last year, which massively impacted my hormones. And it appeared at the start of the year that I was going into premature menopause, or at least that's what the GP said to me. So this, as a 36-year-old who was actually looking at fertility treatment, was absolutely devastating. And again, had no support really. And with my PMDD, because after the burnout, my hormones were all over the place, PMDD was absolutely atrocious. I had gone back to the GP many times explaining that I was suicidal, probably worse than I'd ever been in my life, every single month. I have a really short cycle as well. It's 23 days. So ultimately, every 2 weeks, I'd fall off a cliff. And I was like, I can't live like this.
No.
Like, I'm self-employed. I can't work. There's nothing I can do. I don't want to be alive. I know that this is not me. And like so many PMDD sufferers will tell you, it's like Jekyll and Hyde. Like,
yeah, that's the term a lot of people use. Yeah. Jekyll and Hyde. Yeah.
And although there was massive relief in knowing that I wasn't mad, which I had before, and especially like on contraception and not knowing what was going on, there's always this fear. Like, mm-hmm. So you're always trying to play catch up. There's always a fear of what's around the corner. Mm-hmm. And it's hugely difficult. And then when, you know, you don't have the support of the people or the industry who you would hope to go to for that support, it can be incredibly traumatic.
Absolutely.
And hopeless.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very confusing. And then it almost perpetuates the harm, I think, in some cases.
I agree. Yeah. Because you feel isolated, you know, you have to expend so much energy fighting for yourself already.
Yeah.
And then you get somewhere where you think you might get some relief. Somebody is there to help you and they don't. And then what do? You know?
Yeah.
And that was where I was at, really, really low. PMDD was really bad. My symptoms were atrocious. The GP, you know, the last time I saw the GP, I was like, you know, I am suicidal for 4 days every 23, at least.
And what do they offer you supports for that?
She said, I mean, like, I think it's quite obvious that you are like one of the 1% of women under 40 who are going into premature menopause. And there is a place in town, I believe, that is set up for women under 40.
Okay.
The name of it. Mm-hmm. That was in June that I saw her. And that was the last thing I heard from her.
Were you expecting her to be back in touch with you?
Yeah. Well, I mean... If somebody told you they were suicidal, you know, I know GPs are under pressure, and this is not a witch hunt by me for all GPs, but also there's a duty of care there. And I think when you go into that industry, you want to help people. And regardless of any holes in your education or systems involved, you have to hold yourself accountable. And if you're not being able to provide the support to people that need it, then you need to find out why. You need to do something about it.
100%. No, 100%. In a case of something like that, like, it's a very serious condition it can be a serious condition. It isn't always, but in your case, it obviously was, and you didn't get the supports you needed. Mm-hmm. So what happened then, Liz?
So as you mentioned at the start, I have just finished up my training with Red School, and I was really fortunate to have the most incredible mentor, Abby, and she is a functional medical practitioner. And I had tried to find someone, you know, with those sort of qualifications in Ireland to work with, and unfortunately they were really busy and I just couldn't. And she offered to help, and just that, even Lisa, just having someone, you know, on my team gave me hope. And from there, we've done some testing, and I'm going to wait for results of that. But also throughout the training with Red School and just my own research and my own relationship with myself and my menstrual cycle now, I have given, there's an ease to myself. So there's an allowance, there's an acknowledgement that these hard days do come, and I have to be really kind to myself, and I have to go against what society wants from me, which is to go, do, and just go, do you know what? If I need to spend 3 days in bed here, that's what I'm going to do. And if I don't, then it reverberates through the whole cycle. But the kinder I've been to myself, the more in tune I've become with my own needs, the more I've listened to my cycle and used it as a power, as opposed to fighting against it or being afraid of it, the easier things have become, the more I've been able to balance my hormones because there's less cortisol involved. So yeah, so my menopausal symptoms, surprisingly enough, over the last 2 months have disappeared.
Wow.
Yeah. So there you go.
No, I think it's really good. It's really healing. And it's important that, because I do a lot of work with anger with people, and it's like our relationship with anger and journeying that and having a somatic felt sense of it and finding safe ways to express it. And it actually can be a really good force for creativity and change, anger, you know, but women are socialized away from their anger.
Yeah.
And even more so women of color. So yeah, just a little thought is it's healthy, right? To own your anger.
Yeah, I mean, like, you couldn't be more spot on with what you said, and it's only a very recent acceptance that I have. And I am absolutely enraged, but it's what is propelling me forward to change things. Like, it's why I'm so impassioned about the medical industry and them, and this not happening to other women. It's unacceptable. So I think it can be like, yes, it can be hugely destructive if you are holding it in all the time and repressing, but it's also an amazing like catalyst for change. And
that's, yeah, because it's there for a reason. Yeah. Like, it does, it really does help. It's like, I see anger as an indicator in our system that a boundary has been crossed. Yeah. And in this case, a very big boundary, a huge trespassing of your dignity, of your rights, right?
Yeah.
And then the collective piece there, because you're seeing that is not, it wasn't just about you, like, this happens in the system. And then we see that play out and we hear about it all the time. And then I get really angry then when I do see, like I said earlier, like, it's great to see endometriosis being talked about, but I get very angry when the medical system isn't able to hold up their hand and say, oh yeah, we're actually playing a part in this and we need to get better at what we're doing. It's constantly defensiveness.
Yeah,
constantly.
Yeah. Always.
Yeah.
Brick walling. Oh no, sorry, not brick walling. What's the word? Stonewalling, don't they?
Stonewalling, yeah. It's a very...
There's no apology. There's no ignition.
It's a very self-protective. I see it as like a very patriarchal like force.
It absolutely is. It really is.
Anyway,
unfortunately, like, most people don't realize that or won't acknowledge that until something goes wrong.
Yeah.
Which is sad, because it's sad that it has to get to that place, kind of thing. But then I guess like you're doing as much as you can to raise awareness and.
It's a big part of my work as well, as helping, like, what you've already done is navigating the system, learning to speak up for yourself. It's very hard to do that. You know, it's very, very difficult. It's very draining. No wonder you were wrecked. You're battling a very big system there. Like, I think one of the most stressed times in my life, Liz, was fighting for my rights to have surgery. I had to fight for, like, you know, the way people talk about in Ireland, there's loads of media about like all these women going abroad for surgery.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the medical system actually tried to prevent me from doing that because they tried to keep me in the country and be treated by what I only described as like just, you know, the surgeons who were just not great at doing endometriosis surgery. Yeah. Surgery. And
non-specialist.
Like a non-specialist, exactly. Underskilled in this area for the standard around the world. And the medical system tried to keep me here and I had to get like approval. It was just this big insurance argument. And it was, I think it was probably the most stressful time in my life because I was going for surgery, but I had to like fight for it and navigate all these barriers and everything. And it was absolutely crazy. I think I actually recorded it in episode like 2 or 3 of this podcast.
I was going to say, I definitely heard you talk a little bit about it, but yeah, I mean, it's insane, right? It's literally
because you can see it. You can see it being played out. And then it's just, it feels like this power is trying to control you with something that you need. It's just, it's horrific. So yeah, I have no time for it either. And I'll happily speak about it.
I love it. I might need to tone down the old like medical health industry bashing, but you're right on board with me. Come on. We're going to take the fuckers down.
Yeah, exactly. Like I get annoyed. Anyway,
I'm not surprised at all. Like
I've also been like pulled. Say it on the podcast. It's my podcast. I can say what I want on my own podcast.
Yeah, you can. Absolutely. Come on, Lisa.
I won't name any names, but I was invited on to a very big mainstream podcast to talk about the menstrual cycle last year.
Yeah.
And they had my segment all booked and everything, and that was fine. And then the next day, and it was exciting because it was a kind of a big mainstream health podcast. And then the next day their producer called me and said, oh, we have to cancel the segment. Sorry about that. And I was like, okay. And they didn't explain why. And I was kind of a bit suspicious, you know. And then they had wanted me to talk about periods and endometriosis. And then a few weeks later, I saw they published the podcast, but they had a medical doctor on instead of me, which is fine. You know, they're well on their right. But I listened to the episode and it was all like, oh, you know, and it was a man who is a host of this podcast. And he, you know, the doctor was teaching him about what endometriosis is. And then the positioning was, oh, you know, women should go to the doctor if they have like pain, you know, make sure you go to the doctor. Like that was the message of the podcast. And I was raging. So I was like, we've been to the doctor. Stop telling us to go to the doctor. I was so annoyed because I felt like.
Again, isn't it? It's just like.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole, like, that's it. It's on you.
Exactly. Like, because I felt like I'd been, you know, put to the side because I don't have the qualification as a doctor, but I'm the one talking to these people. Like, not that it was about me personally and my ego, but like my work represents, you know, and what my voice represents in the space. And yeah, I was really annoyed about that. And then I contacted them and asked them if, you know, politely, if they'd let me know why they canceled the segment, but they never replied to me. So that didn't go down well in my books. Anyway.
on the podcast, come on, name and shame them.
No, I won't, because I'll get sued. I'll tell you after.
I won't bring it up. Lisa, you know that story?
Well, it's not hard. There's how many wellness podcasts are there in Ireland that are hosted by men, you know? So there's probably like 5 or 6 like big ones. So take a guess. Well, let's not guess here, but I, you know, we can talk about it afterwards.
Okay. Okay. No, do tell me after.
Anyway. Okay. So Liz, what I want to talk to you about next. So with your journey with menstrual cycle awareness, and then you've just shared with me that you no longer have your perimenopausal symptoms. Okay, lol, obviously, like sarcastic comment. And what was it, like practically speaking, what was it about menstrual cycle awareness and working more cyclically with your body and your psychology around your menstrual cycle? Like, did you do anything practically, or was it more emotional, psychological work, or was it both?
In order to support myself, you mean?
Yeah, to get to like a feeling better.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess like there was this huge thing always, right? That about 5 years ago, I was like, I'm doing everything right. Right. I'm eating right. I am meditating. I am practicing yoga. I am minding myself. I am sleeping well. And I hadn't. So I was like, I'm doing everything right. Why am I still getting these major low moods out of nowhere kind of thing? And then with this newfound knowledge of my cycle, I'm becoming more and more familiar with it every single month. Like I can now pinpoint the days pretty much that are a struggle to me. So like mentioned earlier, my cycle's quite short at the moment. So like days 16, 17, 18 and 19 for me are like, as some people call it, a hell week or a hell 2 weeks. They are generally my really difficult days. And when I say difficult, so there is from a physical point of view, I have chronic fatigue. I could go for I'm a pretty active person, pretty healthy, pretty fit. I could go for an hour dog walk or an hour and a half dog walk, and I'd have to sleep for maybe 3 or 4 hours after that. Yeah, so I just, as opposed to kind of fighting that, there's this recognition that actually, like, my body needs deep rest here. Mm. And thankfully, from working with my own mental health for so long anyway, I have a good bank of tools, if you like, that I already use. So as you mentioned earlier, like, I teach mindfulness, meditation, yoga. Yoga was huge for me. It was the first time I actually was able to sense into my body and make the connection between how I was feeling in my body first, as opposed to my head getting in the way. That was massive. That was a huge learning for me.
That's so interesting, Liz, because I think you're right. Like, and I've struggled with this too, where you learn the tools and we intellectualize them. And like you said, like, you were quote unquote doing everything right, which you were.
Yeah.
But then what I'm hearing now is rather than you reaching for another tool to try, you actually leaned into your body more and you started to follow your impulses and your needs from a kind of nervous system somatic place.
Absolutely. More. Yeah. So I've worked with, it's funny, and you talk about nervous systems. I never stop talking about nervous systems. So it was.
Me too.
Yeah. They're the best. Yeah. I worked in canine behavior and still do a little for a very long time, and really, more than kind of doing any sort of dog training, it was teaching people about their dog's body language, about energy, but also about nervous systems and triggers and being able to come back to homeostasis and things like that. And the more and more knowledgeable I've become on my nervous system, what my nervous system requires, and also the effects of a huge amount of trauma in my life, how that has affected me. Mm. The more I come into relationship with myself and know what I need on a day-to-day basis, the easier things are. And that's not to say that sometimes, like, you know, the bad days are bad, but for the last two cycles, for example, I haven't had any suicidal ideation, which is the first time in ages. And it's like these little wins. Well, it's fucking massive win, isn't it? But
yeah,
it's like, my God, this is like the power of menstrual cycle awareness. Like, if you can just allow, if you can just sense into this incredible power that's giving us all of these messages every day and be kind, right? And give yourself what you need, then it's like life changing.
Absolutely. I love what you said there, like the little win. It's not a little win at all. I don't actually think there's such a thing as a little win in this work, is there? Because it is really, like Alexandra talks about 1% and 1% changes resulting in 1%, usually more, 1% benefits.
Yeah.
But the suicidal ideation, like from a trauma perspective, as I understand it, it's a way our system is looking for relief and coping with overwhelm. And like you say, like a history of a lot of trauma and our whole system is just exhausted and we're looking for some kind of relief, you know. So it's about letting some of that tension out that we've been holding on for so long, but it's to do it in a way that's gentle and, like you say, with support, with the right supports, with people who understand, people who are compassionate, people who understand the cyclical nature of the cycle.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think I'm seeing this a lot, and I've had a few chats to various different people in the wellness kind of field and yoga teachers and studios and stuff, and there's an awful lot, I think, as well because of COVID, like people are out there going like hell for leather and, you know, in the gym, like all of the yang and none of the yin, you know. Very much in line with how society is, the push and the get things done. That is not how we are as women, that is not how we are as females. We are many, many things. We are four seasons, and we need to listen deeply to those parts of ourselves. Because if we don't, then resistance causes pain, right?
Yeah.
And that's, that's very much where I was. It was terrifying for me to come out of summer. So after I've ovulated, looking into autumn, this hell week with PMDD or 2 weeks, terrifying every time, you know, and there was so much resistance. Always. Whereas now it's like, right, actually, how can I plan my life And what can I do in order to facilitate all of these parts of my cycle?
Mm-hmm.
And with that comes an ease.
Yeah. Yeah. It obviously does come with an ease. I think the struggle is the fact that we live in this linear like paradigm in the world. So it can be hard for some people. But again, going back to that whole idea of one small actionable changes, like one day at a time approach.
Yeah.
Because even when you learn menstrual cycle awareness, I know for me, like my world, my mind was blown open. My world changed.
Yeah.
But I think I did put pressure on myself to have to like integrate it immediately overnight, you know?
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work like that.
No, not at all. Like, unfortunately, we still live in the rather patriarchal society that we still do. And so there's, you know, like there can be a lot of shame there as well. It's like, oh, I need to do this, but I, you know, I'm not able to. And then, you know, again, you're loading like shoulds on yourself, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like you keep saying, like that concept, the 1%. I know, I think is it James Clear in Atomic Habits talks about something similar, and just doing a little bit. And it's like, yeah. I have ADHD as well, which I hid away from and shunned for a long time because I was fed up of labels.
Yeah.
But that is, again, like, and also goes hand in hand with PMDD, apparently, although I need to research that a lot.
That's true.
But yeah.
Yeah. Just
due to hormone fluctuations and things. But it's a groundbreaking thing, isn't it? 1%. Because it's always more. It's always more. But if you can,
it's always more, but it's always like we can only have the present moment, you know, like you teach in your meditation work. And I love it as well. In the 12-step programs, they also talk about like one day at a time. And that's a lovely, gentle approach to their recovery work as well. And it's so powerful because I think if we try to like take everything on, what we're doing is we're taking information, but we're using it in the same dynamic of what the original problem was.
Yeah, yeah.
So we actually need to unlearn a lot of stuff.
It causes overwhelm so easily as well, doesn't it? You know, like as you spoke about earlier, like especially like similar sort of histories or what have you with different conditions, but like being able to intellectualize everything, but then there's a difference in being able to intellectualize it and actually feel it, you know?
Yeah.
And not like I used to do that a lot. I, you know, could explain exactly what was going on, but I wouldn't feel into what was happening. So so then again, not allowing myself to be in the moment.
Yeah. Integrating it.
Yeah.
I have a podcast on that. I think the importance of integration, that was like 2 or 3 episodes back. And it's so important, isn't it, to be able to give yourself time and space to like embody the work and the learning. But it does require patience. And we don't live in a world where that's valued, you know, the slow growth of something.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And this whole idea of getting a quick fix. And because this is a problem, and I see it in my work, because women and people with menstrual cycles have been so let down by the medical system, then there can be this urgency that comes from that trauma, and this urgency that then they need to get the quick fix. So they'll project it onto the wellness system that they then enter, or the, you know, holistic health or coaching or whatever, even on MCA, menstrual cycle awareness. And so we have to just be careful that we're not in that same, it's a relating problem more than it is actually an intellectual problem, I think. You know,
I think I lost my way a little bit there, but it was something like we were speaking about nervous systems. And I think like you were saying, with regards to knowing these things, using the kind of 1% approach, because you can go into overwhelm very easily. Like, you know, when you have all of this information, and also, again, talking about integration, and then obviously your nervous system gets overactivated and then things become a struggle again. And it is really important to, like, that's been a huge one for me, is to recognize when I am going into overwhelm and allow myself some space to pause.
How do you recognize that in yourself? Do you mind me asking?
Yeah, sure. So a lot of the time it's a really familiar feeling, because it would have been something that I was always in, which I would have recognized as anxiety. And would always rise from my tummy right up to my chest, a tighter chest, tight traps, tight neck, tight shoulders, shallowing of breath, really all kind of torso, and thoughts kind of quite often getting jumbled and racing and feeling like I'm never going to get anywhere. And then the inner critic, which we talk a lot about in menstrual cycle work, coming in louder to tell me that I haven't got my shit together and I'm not going to be able to get where I want to go. So it's very, again, like this hugely important for me to be able to recognize in my body when these things are happening, to have space, to pause, to breathe, to ground, and to prevent like going up into the mind and up into the thoughts and then listening to untrue thoughts and things like that.
Yeah, listening to untrue thoughts. I love that. Or not doing that, rather, you know. Yeah, because I can really relate to that. And I really relate to what you're sharing about anxiety and overwhelm and how that's familiar and how it's so somatic body based, and your ability now to pause and make a different choice with how you progress with your day.
Yeah.
You know, and interrupt the like spiraling, whether it's in the mind or the body and the hormones and the cortisol. That's really important. And I think when you start to do this work, you do learn that that is actually a priority, to learn how to regulate your nervous system and be able to recognize it and catch it instead of just it unconsciously unfolding into the day, into the week, into the month. Because that's the same as it was for me as well.
And it's amazing how many things that we can do from a really practical point of view in order to like regulate our nervous systems and not overactivate them, like what we're putting in our body, our diet, drinking too much coffee, not getting enough sleep.
Yeah, so, I know. And it's usually the simple basic things, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, the things that maybe your GP should tell you before they put you on a pill.
Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to Tom Coleman. He's a sleep coach who I did a course with, and I regularly follow his content, and he has great tips on good sleep.
Okay.
And he does a lot of talking about women's hormones, which I really appreciate. Sleep cycle and circadian rhythm and all that. Yeah, he's great. He's an Irish man doing just kind of sleep stuff, sleep coaching.
That's exactly what it is, isn't
sleep
it?
Coaching. Yeah. And often he says to people, you don't have a sleep problem, you have a lifestyle problem. And I love that.
Yeah. I mean, when I was at my sickest, I was sleeping 4 hours. I mean, I was sleeping 4 hours a night for years. Like, I was so, if you're sleeping 4 hours a night, you're going to be ill.
Yeah. Like, and it's kind of a badge of honor. People say, oh, I didn't get any sleep. Yeah, I was working all night or whatever.
It's mental.
It's bonkers. And sleep, like what I learned from him was we actually do two really important things we do in our sleep. Was actually lots of important things. But the two things I took away from that course was we regulate our hormones in our sleep. Mm-hmm. In the first half of our sleep, and we also process emotions. So I thought that was very cool to learn.
Yoga nidra is amazing for that as well.
I do that too. Yoga nidra. Yeah, I love yoga nidra. Oh my god, it's so handy. It's like in your pocket because you can have it on your phone.
Yeah, absolutely. It's magic yoga. Absolutely. Yeah. Magic yoga.
Yeah, it's powerful stuff. So last question, Liz, if you have a moment, where are you now? How are things for you now, and what is your focus with this work in MCA?
Right now, I'm giddy from having this chat with you because it's been fab. It's always great to connect with people who have been on the struggle too and are aligned. But from a like personal point of view, I'm coming out of what was a really hard year. Like, it's very ironic, having finished my master's in mindfulness and then doing my yoga teacher training, but through COVID and being very isolated, then suffered a massive burnout, and I'm coming through that now and I feel well, you know, and I'm excited to essentially, I said it before, but like all of this suffering that I have experienced in my life, and it might sound cliched, but it's for a reason. And I am absolutely adamant that teenage girls, but also women who are out there now struggling, shouldn't, the word should or what have you, but they don't need to. There are supports available, not the right ones yet, but yeah, it's my kind of mission in life to prevent people from struggling like I had to, being so alone for so long with wrong diagnoses and having to survive through life rather than thrive. And that's where I feel like I'm at now. I feel like I'm just about to step into into thriving mode. Obviously with, you know, it's life and I have to mind myself and stay grounded and stay really in tuned with what I need. But yeah, I'm quite empowered at the moment and ready to change the world, Lisa. That's it.
That's what we do here.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
There needs to be more of us. Come on, we need a little army and then we can make change. Oh no, there is a little army already.
There is an army, right. But like what else? As I said before we started talking, we were just having the chats about changing the world. And I said to Liz, it's like, what else would we be doing with our time? Yeah. You know?
Just watch out all those people who said that we couldn't. You just wait.
And the thing is, like, I love what you said about feeling, like you said, I feel well and I want, you know, no longer surviving but thriving. And I think we have every right to feel really good in our bodies and our minds and our spirits and our emotional selves, and to be able to be in a position to, yes, do this work and offer the work you're doing, and also thrive and feel pleasure in your body. And yes, you'll have your dark days in your menstrual cycle, but you have all the tools and the skills to hold yourself in through the shadows. And I still have to do that as well. I move through shadows very, very often with my cycle, but it's like, I don't have the fear that I used to have anymore. And it's not as bad as it used to be. You know, it doesn't rob me of so much time and energy.
I mean, that you just kind of nailed it on the head there a lot, which was like robbing of time and energy. And that's how I spent a lot of my life feeling, you know, very much feeling like a lot of my life has been robbed, but there's a lot of life left and there's a lot of other lives to impact. So that's the aim.
So for people who are listening who are new to the podcast, you're very welcome, and they think they might identify with your symptoms and experience, like, what would you suggest for them, one or two things to start with?
With regards to PMDD particularly?
Personally,
I mean, it's an expense, but I would find a functional medical practitioner. I think that will save you a shitload of time, of energy, of tears, of going to people who didn't get the education and aren't willing to hold their hands up and say, I don't know, i.e. most of the health industry. It's very much, you can, there's an awful lot that can be done from a lifestyle point of view. You have to be, you have to show up for yourself. You have to be honest about the things that you are doing and that you are not doing. Like, you have to eat well, you have to sleep, balance your circadian rhythms, you know. There's an awful lot of information out there. But from a support point of view, anything done by the Red School is, like, there's so many resources by them and on your website as well, and, you know, free resources as well. And they're excellent. When things are severe, or if things are severe and impacting, you find a functional medical practitioner.
Yeah, I had one as well for my endometriosis journey too.
Yeah.
And it really helped a lot. So yeah, it's a good, all those things that Liz has mentioned, you know, there's so many different supports out there. It's just take your time with it. Do some research, do some reading around. Like you said, Red School, there's stuff on my website as well.
Yeah.
And your social media, are you offering classes at the moment?
Yeah, I have a course starting in 2-3 weeks.
A mindfulness meditation course?
Yeah, it's an introduction to mindfulness meditation and stress relief. So it is open to all types of practitioners, whether you have meditated before or not. So if you're brand new, and that is, you know, and thanks for bringing it back to that as well, because mindfulness definitely changed my life. I'm really bad at plugging myself, aren't I?
That's another healing. Like, I've had to journey that too. It's like, yeah, let's talk about money and pricing.
So, mindfulness. I did started my master's, or finished my master's last year, in mindfulness based interventions at UCD. And mindfulness in general, meditation has, dramatically helped me in life. And obviously, being more in tune with my nervous system, better able to regulate stress. That is absolutely massive if you have PMDD.
And that's all evidence-based, by the way. So I think, and I, my own healing journey, when I started my healing path in my early 20s, started with mindfulness, actually. And it was kind of before people were taught, like, my dad thought I was bonkers because I kept going home and talking about meditation, and they were kind of like, who's Lisa turning into, you know? And I was like buying books on Amazon because they weren't available in bookshops here in Dublin.
Oh, wow.
This is so powerful. Mindfulness.
That's amazing, so good, though, that you found, you know, that you were able to find that in your 20s and stuff, you know?
Yeah. It was a good friend put me onto it, and I was teaching English in Spain, and there were people there who were into holistic alternative health, and one lady was really into meditation, and she got me into it as well. A couple of years, it wasn't that long before, but it was a couple of years it was in the mainstream in Ireland. Like, it was in Ireland, it just wasn't as commonly talked about. And the mindfulness, what's it called? MBSR?
Mindfulness-based stress reduction.
That the Jon Kabat-Zinn course, I don't think that had yet come here. So
yeah,
I do highly recommend mindfulness meditation, and there's loads of apps and everything you can download. You know, I regularly use Insight Timer.
Same.
Yeah, it's just nice. It's really, really helpful. But again, like we said before, just one day at a time, you know, 10 minutes, start with 10 minutes and then work your way up.
Absolutely. Yeah. The 1%, right? Any sort of restorative practice, any sort of yoga practice, yoga nidra is amazing. Yoga nidra helps an awful lot. But yeah, mindfulness just allows you that pause, and teaches you or just enables you to have more tools. You know, is a huge one to support yourself when times are difficult and when times aren't difficult. But yeah, but to come back to the present moment, which is groundbreaking for so many of us.
Yeah. And it's hard to talk about. You kind of have to experience it, don't you? Mindfulness, to really see how beneficial it is. It's hard to put into words, I find.
Yeah, I think it is. I think as well, it's difficult at the moment, like I touched upon earlier, like people, especially, you know, in times of struggle, people just kind of put their head down and get on with it. You know, that's how we've been kind of conditioned, which is not going to help in the long run and, you know, absolutely magnifies chronic conditions.
Yeah.
Because you end up not listening to your own needs and what your body needs. And our bodies tell us, they're so intelligent. They tell us everything. And mindfulness just gives that place to pause. It gives you the tools to recognize what's going on a bit better.
Yeah, it's very powerful.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Liz, for coming on and sharing your story and having a laugh with me too, and getting enraged with me for a moment. Yeah, no worries. And do come back anytime, because we'd love to hear how you're getting on with your journey, your unfolding journey, which is always unfolding for me too. And if you're interested in doing any one-to-one coaching with me, I do currently have space available. So you can head on over to the link in the show notes. It's lisadeyoungcoaching.com. You can set up a consult call with me and we can arrange that. And that is all about regulating your nervous system, finding hormonal balance in your endocrine system. We look at trauma healing and learning to integrate menstrual cycle awareness into your everyday life. And I'll also pop all of Liz's details in the show notes too. And that's it from us. Thanks to everyone for listening and have a lovely rest of your week, and I'll see you next week. Bye. Thank you for joining today's conversation. This community, these topics, and the stories I share are not possible without all of you being part of the journey. If you are interested in getting more support for your own personal process, head on over to my website, lisadeyoungcoaching.com, to book a consultation call with me. Or you can sign up for a free course there as well. And as always, please like, subscribe, and share this podcast with your friends. Lots of love for the week, and see you next time.